Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!, broadcasting from Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana.
Pronged attack on the rule of law, and that has real consequences for real people, including things like individuals being deported mistakenly or individuals being swept up in immigration raids who happen to actually be U.S. citizens. It's very, very concerning.
Law scholars and former Justice Department officials are warning the United States is facing a constitutional crisis as President Trump escalates his attack on the rule of law, from detaining hundreds of international students and threatening judges to using executive orders to target law firms and universities. We'll speak to David Cole, Georgetown law professor and former ACLU legal director. Then, Trump requests a record $1 trillion budget for the Pentagon, while other agencies face major cuts or even elimination.
Spending $1 trillion on the Pentagon when you're decimating basic services is really obscene. You know, they want to build a Golden Dome defense system and new fighter plane that are unlikely to work as defense systems, but they're going to work to line the pockets of weapons contractors.
We look at how President Trump is threatening Iran again ahead of this weekend's U.S.-Iran nuclear talks in Oman.
I think if the talks aren't successful with Iran, I think Iran is going to be in great danger. And I hate to say it, great danger, because they can't have a nuclear weapon.
All that and more coming up. The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana. Stock markets around the world are plummeting after President Trump's sweeping and unprecedented tariffs on imports to the United States took effect at midnight. They include across-the-board tariffs of 104% on Chinese goods, which prompted China to retaliate with levies of 84% on imports of U.S. goods. Hong Kong's benchmark Hang Seng Index fell by over 13%, its biggest one-day drop since 1997. Japan's Nikkei Index fell by nearly 8%. Markets in India and the Middle East also tumbled. On Tuesday evening, President Trump celebrated the chaos set off by his trade war, telling an audience at the National Republican Congressional Committee's annual gala that foreign leaders are lining up to make a deal.
I'm telling you, these countries are calling us up, kissing my ass. They are dying to make a deal. Please, please, sir, make a deal. I'll do anything. I'll do anything, sir.
On Wall Street, Goldman Sachs has further raised the prospect of recession in the next year, now putting the odds at 45%. A CNBC survey found two-thirds of U.S. corporate executives believe Trump's trade war will trigger a recession. Israeli airstrikes on eastern Gaza City have killed at least 29 Palestinians, with 80 others missing and dozens more wounded. Scores of people are believed to be trapped in the rubble after the strikes leveled 10 residential buildings. At the United Nations, Secretary General Antonio Guterres on Tuesday reiterated his demands for Israel to end its total siege of Gaza, now in its sixth week.
More than an entire month has passed without a drop of aid into Gaza. No food, no fuel, no medicine, no commercial supplies. As aid has dried up, the floodgates of horror have reopened. Gaza is a killing field, and civilians are in an endless death loop.
An autopsy has revealed that a Palestinian teen who died in Israeli prison last month likely starved to death. 17-year-old Waleed Khaled Abdullah Ahmed collapsed on March 22nd in Israel's notorious Megiddo prison, where he'd been held without trial for 6 months for allegedly throwing stones at Israeli soldiers. An Israeli doctor who observed the autopsy said Ahmed had suffered severe muscle and fat loss. He also had scabies and showed signs of torture. In New Jersey, the family of a 14-year-old Palestinian-American boy shot dead by Israeli forces is demanding an investigation into his killing. Family members say Omar Mohammed Rabir was shot 11 times in total during an Israeli raid Sunday near the town of Tomasiyah in the occupied West Bank. The World Food Program is calling on the Trump administration to reverse $1.3 billion in cuts to emergency food assistance for 14 nations facing famine. The WFP said in a statement, quote, if implemented, this could amount to a death sentence for millions of people facing extreme hunger and starvation, unquote. Secretary of State Marco Rubio had previously promised to preserve the funds. In immigration news, the Trump administration's revoked deportation relief for more than 900,000 immigrants who entered the United States through a parole process under President Biden. The Homeland Security Department has ordered immigrants who were given temporary protections under a Biden-era smartphone app known as CBP One to leave the United States before in the coming days or face arrest and deportation. In related news, the acting head of the Internal Revenue Service is resigning after the agency agreed to share personal tax data on undocumented immigrants with federal agents. Melanie Krause is at least the third top official to leave the IRS since Trump took office. Here in New York, Mayor Eric Adams is reopening an Immigration and Customs Enforcement office inside the Rikers Island jail complex. Adams first signaled the move after he met with Trump's so-called border czar, Tom Homan, in February. The New York Civil Liberties Union slammed Adams' administration for, quote, selling out New Yorkers for Trump's dangerous deportation regime, unquote. The group said in a statement, quote, ICE's presence on Rikers serves no legitimate purpose and opens the door to unlawful collusion between local law enforcement and federal immigration officials in violation of our city's well-established sanctuary protections. New Yorkers see this for what it is. Mayor Adams is skirting the city council, cozying up to Trump and putting immigrant New Yorkers in harm's way, the New York Civil Liberties Union said. A federal immigration judge is set to rule Friday on whether the Trump administration has grounds to deport Palestinian Columbia University student protest leader Mahmoud Khalil or whether he should be freed. In a hearing in Louisiana Tuesday, Judge Jamie Comins gave Trump officials a little over 24 hours to present their evidence in the case. Only 10 journalists were allowed at Tuesday's hearing, while others said they were denied entry to watch it remotely. Khalil's wife, Dr. Noor Abdullah, published a letter Tuesday in which she wrote, quote, exactly a month ago, you were taken from me. This is the longest we've been apart since we got married. I miss you more and more every day, and as the days draw us closer to the arrival of our child, I'm haunted by the uncertainty that looms over me, she wrote. In related news, a federal judge in Vermont has denied a request for ICE to release Tufts University student Remesa Özturk on bail while her case is resolved in court. This came after a judge ruled her case could be moved from Boston to the state of Vermont. Özturk remains jailed at a privately run ICE detention center in Louisiana after being taken by masked, plainclothes federal agents from the streets of Somerville, Massachusetts, in late March. This comes as Trump's State Department has revoked the visas of nearly 300 international students nationwide. The students, including at the University of California, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Harvard, and other schools, now face deportation. Meanwhile, new videos emerged of the arrest of Barakhan Suri, a Georgetown University professor and postdoctoral scholar who last month was ambushed by masked federal agents outside his family's home in Roslyn, Virginia. After being repeatedly transferred across at least five ICE facilities, he's currently jailed at an ICE detention center in Texas. His legal team said for 2 weeks, Suri was placed in a cell without a bed and with a television blaring 21 hours a day and was denied food or water to break his Ramadan fast. His legal team also said Suri's son spent days crying uncontrollably after his father's arrest and has now stopped speaking. The Trump administration's freezing $790 million in federal funding to Northwestern University and more than $1 billion in funding to Cornell University. This is the latest attack on higher education as dozens of universities face investigations into allegations of anti-Semitism and claims of racial discrimination amidst Trump's efforts to gut diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. China's accused the Trump administration of blackmailing Panama with repeated threats of seizing the Panama Canal to diminish Chinese influence in the region. China's embassy in Panama said on social media relations between the two countries is a, quote, sovereign decision of Panama and something the U.S. doesn't have the right to interfere in, unquote. The remarks came after U.S. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth visited Panama Tuesday for a ribbon-cutting ceremony of a new U.S. finance dock at Vasco Núñez de Balboa Naval Base.
Together, we will take back the Panama Canal from China's influence.
Hegseth also met with Panamanian President José Raúl Moreno. Protesters took to the streets in Panama City in response, condemning Moreno as a traitor for meeting with Trump officials.
Both Trump, Rubio, and now Pete Hegseth have indicated that they are going to take the canal. And obviously, the Panamanian people cannot accept this. And that is why we, a handful of patriots, are on the street today rejecting the presence of the Secretary of War in Panama and repudiating Moreno, the traitor, who behind the people's back is giving away our sovereignty and our self-determination.
Russia's military launched drone attacks on the Ukrainian cities of Dnipro and Kharkiv overnight, injuring at least 17 people. Kharkiv's mayor said the attacks were aimed at terrorizing Ukraine's civilian population into submission.
This is our enemy's new tactic, to frighten the civilians. This is civilian infrastructure of the city. These are production enterprises. These are Kharkov's business people. Of course they are scared. Also, when people go to sleep in the night, when children go to sleep and they encounter such strong strikes, the goal is to frighten the people.
Ukrainian officials say they're sending negotiators to Washington, D.C. next week for talks on a mineral deal that would see the U.S. continuing sending weapons in exchange for U.S. access to Ukraine's valuable mineral resources. The Supreme Court will allow the Trump administration to fire 16,000 federal workers in the probationary period. Tuesday's ruling did not determine whether the administration unlawfully fired the workers, as their union, the American Federation of Government Employees, argued in a lawsuit. Instead, justices ruled 7-2 that the plaintiffs lacked legal standing to bring their case. The White House has shrugged off a spat between President Trump's trade advisor, Peter Navarro, and the world's richest man, Elon Musk. On Tuesday, Musk used his social media site X to hurl insults at Navarro, calling him a moron, Peter retardo, and dumber than a sack of bricks. After Navarro defended Trump's sweeping tariffs and described Tesla as, quote, not a car manufacturer, but a car assembler, unquote. The Washington Post reports Musk has repeatedly tried and failed to pressure Trump to reverse the tariffs. On Tuesday, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt dismissed the feud.
Boys will be boys, and we will let their public sparring continue. And you guys should all be very grateful that we have the most transparent administration in history.
And a federal judge has ordered the White House to reverse a ban on Associated Press reporters in the Oval Office and Air Force One after the AP refused to adopt Trump's new name for the Gulf of Mexico. On Tuesday, U.S. District Judge Trevor McFadden, a first-term Trump appointee, issued a preliminary injunction after determining the White House likely violated the AP's First Amendment protections. We'll have more on that stories after headlines. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, are we in the midst of a constitutional crisis? We'll speak with constitutional law professor David Cole about international students, immigrants, law firms, and universities. Stay with us.
Garden trees bear strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root. black bodies swinging in the southern breeze, strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant south, the bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh. Then the sudden smell of
Strange Fruit, performed by Billie Holiday. It was written by Abel Meeropol, also known as Lewis Allen, as a protest poem against the lynching of African Americans after he said he was haunted by Lawrence Beitler's gruesome, iconic photograph of the 1930 lynching of two black teenagers, Thomas Shipp and Abram Smith, not far from here in Marion, Indiana. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman at Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana, where I gave the David Letterman lecture last night. We're broadcasting from the Unified Media Lab. Joining me from Chicago is Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and it's great to see you've cut the geographical distance between us for at least for a day. And welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, an immigration judge has announced she may rule as early as Friday on whether the Trump administration can keep detaining Mahmoud Khalil, who was seized by federal agents March 8th from Columbia Housing in New York. Mahmoud Khalil was a Columbia University student protest leader involved in Gaza solidarity encampments. The judge has ordered the Justice Department to hand over evidence by 5 p.m. today to justify Mahmoud's continued detention in Louisiana. He was a legal permanent resident of the United States with a green card, which has now been revoked. At least 300 other international students at more than 80 colleges and universities around the country have had their visas revoked in recent weeks. On Tuesday, The Guardian published a letter Mahmoud Khalil's wife, Dr. Noor Abdullah, who's about to give birth, wrote to her jailed husband. It said in part, quote, "We will not be silenced. We will persist with even greater resolve, and we will pass that strength on to our children and our children's children until Palestine is free," she wrote. The case of Mahmoud Khalil comes as many legal scholars say the country is facing a constitutional crisis on a number of fronts, from the Trump administration threats to ignore judicial decisions to the administration's targeting of law firms and universities to Trump's use of the 1798 Alien Enemies Act to expel Venezuelans without due process to a notorious supermax prison in El Salvador. President Trump has even floated the idea of sending U.S. citizens to jails in El Salvador. We're joined now by David Cole, professor at Georgetown University Law Center, former ACLU National Legal Director. His latest piece for the New York Review of Books is headlined Academic Freedom in Peril. Cole also has a piece in The New Yorker titled The Last Time Pro-Palestinian Activists Faced Deportation. And he has a separate piece in The Guardian headlined Trump's Attacks on Law Firms Are an Attack on Law Itself. Before we go into all these issues, Professor Cole, can you start off by talking about this latest decision, a judge ruling that the White House has to reinstate, allow AP to report from the White House covering President Trump, even though it refuses to say Gulf of America, continuing to refer to it as the Gulf of Mexico? The significance of this, David?
Really significant decision from a Trump-appointed judge declaring that the Trump's policy of punishing reporters and media outlets that don't toe his line violates the First Amendment. You know, nothing is more sacred in this country than the right of people and the press to criticize the government, to disagree with the government. And yet the White House was saying, if you disagree with us, if you refuse to call the Gulf of Mexico a new name that Trump has made up, we're going to keep you out of the ability to report on matters in the Oval Office on Air Force One. And the judges said, you can't do that. You can't punish the media for its point of view.
And David, what about this? There was a federal appeals court has overturned another firing of the Trump administration of two top federal labor officials. The court ordered that they be restored. Trump had abruptly fired the Gwynne Wilcox of the National Labor Relations Board and Kathy Harris of the Merit Systems Protection Board. And these are judicial bodies that oversee federal workers, and they are supposed to be fired only for neglect or malfeasance.
Right. So this is, again, part of Trump's effort to try to neutralize any checks and balances on his unlawful actions here by removing officers who have independence under our laws from the mere political will of the president. There are certain agencies that we want to have independence, the Federal Reserve, the NLRB, the Federal Trade Commission. We don't want them making political decisions. We want them making decisions that are in the best interests of the country. And so that's what Congress has said. The president nonetheless dismissed these officers. They challenged his dismissal as a clear violation of the statute, which says he can't dismiss them just because he doesn't like them. He has to identify some actual wrongdoing or malfeasance or neglect of duty that they have engaged in. And so the D.C. Circuit has upheld their challenge at this point. I'm sure the Trump administration will take it to the Supreme Court, and they'll have the final word.
And what about these attacks on law firms, on major U.S. law firms that have been involved in pro bono work? Lawyers are supposed to be officers of the court. Talk about the impact that this is having on the legal profession.
Yeah. So, you know, if you are, engaged in an effort to violate legal restrictions, right, left and center, lawyers are a problem, because what lawyers do is sue you when you violate the law. And so what you see President Trump doing is attempting to disable the bar from challenging his actions, and in particular to disable what is often referred to as big law, the big law firms that have, in some instances, thousands of attorneys, incredible resources, and often use those resources pro bono to challenge unlawful actions of the government. That's when they're acting at their best in the sort of the ideals of the legal profession, upholding the law. Trump has singled them out for doing exactly that, and has done it explicitly in the face on the face of executive orders targeted at these firms. He says, well, you represented immigrants in challenging border policies, or you represented transgender folks in challenging laws that discriminate against transgender people, or you hired Bob Mueller, the former FBI director, who I don't like. And on the basis of those actions, he has imposed really crippling restrictions on firms, such as your security clearances are revoked, so you can't do any confidential classified work involving the government. And you're not allowed to go into federal buildings, which means you can't go to federal court. You can't go to the Justice Department. You can't do your work. Three courageous firms, Perkins Coie, WilmerHale, and Jenner and Block, have stood up to this blatantly illegal attack, went to court, challenged it the day these orders were issued. Judges
immediately enjoin these orders because they are illegal on their face. You cannot retaliate against lawyers because you don't like the lawsuits they've brought or the partners that they have hired. And so the firms have been successful. And I would predict that no judge up to the Supreme Court will uphold what the Trump administration is doing. Yet, four firms, Skadden Arps, Paul Weiss, Milbank, and Wilkie Farr, have settled with the president, have essentially given in to his illegal demands, have agreed to change their management structure within and to his liking, and have agreed to donate hundreds of millions of dollars of pro bono assistance to support causes that Trump approves of. That is not, what the legal profession is supposed to be about. It is not supposed to be about trying to curry favor with the administration by agreeing to illegal demands from the boss to only do his bidding. And that's unfortunately what we see for law firms doing here. I think this is a threat to the legal profession, but it's more than that. It's a threat to the rule of law, because what Trump is trying to do is neutralize the opposition that comes from lawyers who only are successful in their opposition when you are violating the law. He wants to violate the law with impunity, and so he's trying to take the law firms out of the business of challenging his actions.
Professor David Cole, I wanted to ask you about the students who have been detained. Interestingly, here at Ball State, there are five students and alum who were arrested at the end of February protesting around Palestine issues and investment in Israel. But I am talking now about Mahmoud Khalil. I'm talking about Ramessa Öztürk. Talk about the detention of, the removing of visas of green cards, the abducting of these student leaders. In the case of Ramessa, she'd written an op-ed in her Tufts paper about Palestine issues. Can you talk about what's going on here?
You know, what's going on here is absolutely clear. The Trump administration is trying to suppress protests that it doesn't like. And we don't have to guess about it. Just as with the law firm orders, Trump has put it out there in the public, in this time in a tweet on Truth Social, saying, we're going to go after you for your illegal, quote, what he calls illegal protests. Well, protests are not illegal simply because they express a view that the president disfavors. Protests are protected precisely because they express views that the president or the government disfavors. That's the point of protest. And what the administration is doing is abusing immigration authority that was never designed for this purpose, to target people who are doing nothing more than speaking out in favor of Palestinian rights, opposing and objecting to the massive killing of Palestinians in Gaza by Israel. These are First Amendment protected activities. I could go out on the street right now and protest what's going on in Israel, criticize Israel, and argue for the right of Palestinians to a homeland and the like. And the government has no constitutional authority to go after me for that. Well, the same is true for non-citizens who live among us, the millions and millions of non-citizens who live among us. The First Amendment does not draw distinctions between citizens and non-citizens. It protects speech across the board. The Supreme Court has said because it protects speech across the board, it protects even the speech of inanimate entities like corporations. Well, if it protects corporations because we have an interest in the speech of all, it certainly protects the rights of non-citizens. And indeed, in a case I argued about 40 years ago, court struck down a provision of the McCarran-Walter Act, the then existing immigration law, that made immigrants deportable for advocating communism. And the court said, The First Amendment protects all people within the United States. You can't punish a citizen for advocating communism. You can't deport a foreign national for advocating communism. And the same is true today. You can't punish a citizen for protesting what is